So in 1971, I saw a movie that changed my life. I had a dream that someday I would interview the stars of the movie. Today, that dream comes true. Please welcome in the studio right now, Julie Cole, who you all know and love as Veruca Salt. Peter Ostrom, who you know and love as Charlie Bucket. Paris Thiemann, who you know and love as Mike TV. And Denise Nickerson, who you know and love as Violet Beauregard. You guys, this is I can die. As soon as you leave, I'm just going to die. That's going to be the end.
40 years you've been waiting for this. You need to get out more.
I really do. I really do. When you think about Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, when you think about it today, why do you think it not only holds up, but it holds the magic that it holds? Because for me, it just the moment I saw it, I went, this isn't just a movie. This is just a lifetime of greatness. What is it about that movie?
I think every scene in it is magical. Every scene has got something in it. But ultimately, I suppose it's the wish that every child has to wish, you know, to dream and hope that you win your own chocolate factory.
Yeah.
How marvelous.
It would be nice.
So it would be like winning the lottery, wouldn't it?
It would be better than winning the lottery. Agreed, everybody?
That's Peter Ostrom who's just speaking, by the way.
Peter's had some serious work done, and I say that in quotes.
That's me, Veruca Salt.
Yeah, of course it
but
is.
But it's also, but on a serious thing, but I don't want to get heavy, but it's a moralistic tale. You know, we've said it before. What we hope would happen is that the nice people win out in life and the bad people get it.
Well, so many times in life, you're faced with a choice. And if you do the right thing or you do the wrong thing, there's a key moment. And that movie, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, illustrates that better than any movie I've ever seen.
But good things happen to good kids and bad things happen to bad kids.
Yeah.
And so you're at the fork of...
Fork
of a road.
It's also a lesson in parenting.
Yeah.
Because I don't think they were bad kids. They were just bad parents.
Is that really? I never thought about that.
Oh, it's in the lyric. It's in the lyric of one of the Oompa Loompa songs.
What? I'm trying to remember the exact lyric, Paris. What was it?
What's the exact
lyric? Blaming the kids is a lioner's shame. You know exactly
who's to blame.
The mother and the father.
Honestly, you guys, I'm going to bring my Walkman in, and I want you to redo every song I have on my Walkman. That would be great. Peter, you had asked me when you guys first came in about the first time I saw the movie and do I remember who I saw it with. Mm-hmm. Here's my story. In 1971, I went to see it with friends, and I loved it so much that I went to see it with other friends the next day, one day later. Of all the movies I've ever seen, that's only happened twice in my life, but that's the impact that this movie
has. So what was the other movie?
Napoleon Dynamite.
I see.
Isn't that strange?
We are really up there.
But numerous people come up to us, fans, and for some reason this film has clicked with them, and they remember who they saw the film with for the very first time, be it their mother or their father or brother or sister or friend, but they can tell you exactly who they saw it with, and it made a huge impression on them.
When that happens, you have to know, and I don't even know if during the making of the movie you guys felt the specialness of this.
We didn't.
You didn't?
We didn't have a clue. I don't think anybody did. The producer, the director, none of us had any idea.
Of its longevity. It's lasting.
That 40 years later that people would still be talking about Willy Wonka, that 40 years later, 41 years later, we'd be in Chicago being interviewed. You know, who would have thought?
And in fact, it wasn't on a path to be that sort of a film for the first 10 years or so. In fact, Michael, who played Augustus, who is not here today, but he will be with us at the Hollywood Palms and Hollywood Boulevard, he was completely unaware of the film's longevity. In 1998, after 28 years, when the four of us finally got together, Michael wasn't there, but then he came to the next one, and when we spoke with him, apparently the conventioneers or the people who were doing that reached out to him and they said, "Are you Michael Bullner?" And he said, "Yes." And they said, are you a film star?" And he said, "No." they said, "But you were in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory." And he sort of scratched his head and reached all the way back and remembered, "Oh, yes, I was in that film." And meanwhile, by then, it had been shown on TV since... maybe 81 or
but
something like that.
But not in Germany. So
but
he
not
was
in Germany.
Completely unaware.
He was completely unaware.
So no big deal. In that part of the world, it didn't have the impact that it has here.
No.
Correct.
And still does not.
Still doesn't particularly.
Right?
Well, some of them know it now. But at the time,
office does.
It was completely left field for him.
He plays it to his office workers every Christmas and makes them watch it.
Forces them?
Yeah.
But the amazing thing is it was filmed in Bavaria.
Yeah,
it was.
Just south of Munich.
It was his hometown.
And it's not a popular... thing over there.
Well, you know what's strange is the look of the town looks so European, and yet most of the kids, the three of you particularly, have a very American feel. So it really, it makes it, in your head, it could happen anywhere.
And that was by design.
That was the intention.
It's very hard to pinpoint exactly. You know you're not in Southern California. You know you're not
right.
in America, but where are you?
And that helps really the timelessness.
And even the design of the costumes and everything is all a bit vague.
Right.
And you don't see any cars. Cars always date a movie.
Yeah, and you really don't, do you?
You don't see any.
All right, let me just quickly tell people where they can see you guys, because to see you guys, it's exciting to talk to you, but to see you in person is beyond belief. Friday, Hollywood Boulevard, that's in Woodridge. Saturday, the Hollywood Palm in Naperville. Sunday, back to the Hollywood Boulevard in Woodridge. And the best way for people to know this is to go to atriptothemovies.com. You'll find out the exact times and places there. Let's start out with this. The scene that for me had the most wow factor was the scene with the waterfall where Michael falls in. Was that room really as cool to shoot in as it looked on film? I mean, I get it's a movie and there's, you know, you're going to have ladders and props and union guys saying don't touch that. But what did that room look like?
Actually,
it was better than what you see.
No.
Better.
It was better?
Better than what you see. You can't capture it. We stood at the top of those stairs, and it was breathtaking. I've seen it on big screen.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't capture what my memory remembers. It was just... we hadn't seen it until Mr. Wonka opened the door.
Was that by design, Denise? Did they purposely do
absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. Yeah. And everything was fully entailed in this one enormous building. The Wonkatania, the waterfall, the river, all the edible trees, candy. It was all there, and it was breathtaking.
See, and there weren't those hidden things, like you say, with ladders and areas that were no-go. The whole entire room was dressed.
Because it was in a soundstage, so they had a grid above, and they probably did a lot of the lighting from up there. They just lit the whole room.
See, now, normally, or even, well, I'll say today, if they're doing that scene today, it takes place in several different places.
It'd be a little piece of this and a little piece of that, and you wouldn't get the whole picture.
Assuming that it wasn't a completely blank room that we then had to react to.
Right.
And it would be CGI'd.
Yeah,
it would be. Real. Yeah. It was an entire city.
And
it
wonderful Technicolor. You know, it was glorious Technicolor.
It's the most colorful movie. That and The Wizard of Oz, when it switches over to color, are really the two movies that the color just grabs you.
The new Blu-ray.
Yeah.
The 40th.
It's even better,
edition,
isn't it?
That was just
the designer was a guy named Harper Goff, who had done...
He did a lot of
20,000 Leagues Under the Sea and some other things over at Walt Disney.
Yeah.
And he's the designer whose vision it was that you saw in that room and in all the rooms.
All right,
and
I
was saying, lovely though it is. I mean, I've obviously over the years seen it on TV quite a few times, but I'm really looking forward to going
DVD
to the Hollywood Palms. Well, seeing it on the big screen at the Hollywood Palm, because it'll be a long time since we were all in the same room being able to see it and see it on the big screen.
It's almost like getting the Beatles together again. It really is. To have all of you, and I guess right now Michael would be like Pete Best. He'd be the fifth Beatle. Isn't quite here. All right, I told you what my favorite scene is. Can I go around the room and just ask the four of you, what's the scene that when you think back on that movie had just the most impact on you, you thought was the best done?
I definitely think when I saw the chocolate room.
Yeah?
Well, of course, my other... not so favorite was when I blew up into the world's most famous fruit. It wasn't a very comfortable shoot. No, it was very painful. I was in a giant styrofoam ball for 9 hours. Everyone went to lunch, and Mel Stewart, the director, assigned a man, because we did this in Germany, so most of the crew didn't speak English, so he assigned a man to turn me 180 degrees every 5 minutes so my head would hang to the floor and then up to the ceiling.
So at least the blood would circulate.
That's right. And then I flew back to New York City the next day, and I'm sitting in class, and all the kids are smirking and snickering at me, and I said to my best friend, what? And she says, you're blue. Where they had used food dye in the makeup, and so my neck, my face, my ears, and my hands turned blue for 72 hours.
See, every time I think about that, Denise, I think about the scene in Goldfinger where the girl dies because she had all the gold paint on her, and I was concerned for you. I was only 7 years old, but I was worried for you.
I was concerned for me, too, when I kept looking in the mirror and I was blue again. I thought, oh my goodness, this is a permanent problem.
But now think about the guy who on his resume, as you're going down his resume, it says, I'm the guy that turned Veruca around, you know, to make her comfortable so she could bleed.
It was Violet.
Violet, I'm sorry.
That's
Violet.
Okay. Yeah, you know, I'm not even sure if he even remembers. We didn't have any conversation because all I know knew was it just what
previous occupation, blueberry turner.
There you go, blueberry turner.
Peter,
blueberry
what about
turnover.
You? What's the scene that you thought it was the best part of the movie?
Well, I would have to say only because Jack and I were kind of a team, and so when I first got to Germany, and I was there the longest because mm-hmm. Charlie doesn't get knocked off at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so as soon as I got to Germany, we started working on the song, of which they kept saying, don't worry, you won't have to sing. But then they later decided to keep my voice and not dub somebody else's voice in. And so I worked with Jack. And so probably our little song and dance sequence, just because Jack was, a wonderful person to work with. We really were a team, and he was kind of like my mentor.
Back in movies, and I'm sure you know this, he's in Miracle on 34th mm-hmm. Street. Mm-hmm. Here in the States, most people, I guess, know him for Chico and the Man,
Absolutely.
The TV show he
mm-hmm.
did with Freddie Prinze. Did you keep in touch with him after the movie?
Jack, I did.
Yeah.
And he passed on in 1982.
While doing Chico and the Man.
Correct.
He was still, working. Well, Freddie Prinze had just died, I guess,
Correct.
A year or two earlier.
Correct.
Yeah. A good guy to work with? You learn a lot from him?
Oh, absolutely. Both he and Gene were. Everybody on the cast was wonderful. And probably the most difficult person to work with was Mel, our director.
Why is that?
I think it was difficult. Mel knew what he wanted.
Yeah.
But it was hard for him to convey to other people exactly what he wanted. He knew what he didn't want.
Yeah.
But it was hard for him to say, okay, this is what I want. And so a lot of it was done a little bit by trial and error.
Sure.
Getting together with Mel now, it's interesting talking to him because as a 12-year-old boy, it seemed rather haphazard how to make a film.
Sure.
It didn't make a lot of sense to me. This was the first film and the only film that I've ever done. But it seemed a little bit confusing to me how Mel was going about this. Talking to him now, it seemed like he definitely had a clear plan. He knew he had a vision of what he wanted everything to look like and the feel that he was trying to achieve. So I guess I'm a little bit more sympathetic to Mel Stewart.
Yeah.
I mean, he always goes back to... This is not a children's film. It's a film with children in it, but I was not trying to make a children's film. And I think going back to your question of why it is so popular, a family can watch it, and the kids get something out of it at one level, and the parents get something completely different at a different level.
And I've seen it, I would say, 10 or 11 or 12 times. And it is really one of those movies where you notice a little something more every time you see it.
Correct.
Don't you think?
Correct.
I didn't realize until just a few years ago that so many times when Willy Wonka will throw out a quote, I always thought that was just a random thing that the writer wrote, but he's really quoting other authors, right?
Absolutely. Correct.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think one of the why the film works is they really gave Gene kind of free rein to some degree of what he wanted to do. Certainly more so than the rest of us, but he had an idea of what he wanted Willy Wonka to come across as, and they gave him, he was pretty liberal in his interpretation.
He knew what he was doing. They all knew what they were doing. Paris, let's go to you. What's the scene that stands out the most for you?
Probably the one where we're playing on the rooftops of London, and we're playing Let It Be.
I'm not sure that was you guys.
No, but
I'm
you said
positive.
But you said like the Beatles, or maybe it was the one when we're skiing and we make the snow angels.
Also a good scene.
Do you know that
those
one?
Are all good.
Those
scenes.
Were probably the ones that I
Didn't
liked.
Didn't we
the
actually
best.
Redo that when we did the documentary back in 2003?
Did you?
Yes,
yeah.
We laid down in the snow and we did the snow angels. Yes.
We'll the Sea of Holes.
That's another story.
Okay. The Sea of Holes. Maybe. All right. Anyway. Well, look. We already mentioned the chocolate room. That was a great scene.
Yeah.
For one thing, because of the set, and also Gene does a great song there.
Yeah.
The inventing room was a great looking set, and I got to do a little stunt in that scene because I eat the exploding gum, and they yanked on a wire on the back of my pants and pulled me into some copper pots and pans.
Did they? Yeah.
So that was a stunt. I was really into that. I was a rambunctious 11-year-old.
I think you get paid extra for doing stunts in movies.
No, you do not.
In theory, you do. These days. These days.
Turn blue for 72 hours afterwards.
So I went clattering.
No hazard pay here.
I went clattering into all these pots and pans, and I got up, and I said, wow, that was great. Let's do it again. And they said, no, no, that's okay. We've got it. We got it the first time, you know. So that was good. You know what I like, which I wasn't in, was the psychiatrist scene.
Yeah,
you know?
People forget. There's a lot of scenes at the beginning. Most of us, when we think about the movie, it starts kind of when you get into the chocolate factory. But the early scenes that set it up are just
wonderful.
As good, if not better.
Oh, all I really want is to get Harold back. You know, that woman is great. I'm the detective that's talking to her.
Yeah.
And all those little vignettes. In fact, there's a cute little story about one of those that didn't make it into the film. It made it into the first cut. I know you've read Mel Stewart's book, so you're probably familiar with this.
And there's another book coming out that we'll talk about in a little bit about the movie.
But they shot another one of those vignettes, and it's a guy who wants to talk to the guru at the top of the mountain and find out what's the meaning of life. And the guru opens the Wonka bar and finds that there's no golden ticket inside, and he says, life is disappointment. And they screened that for people, and they thought it was just too depressing a concept.
Sad.
It was a sad thing, and so they cut it out for that reason.
That's amazing.
And on that note, we'll ask Julie what she thinks.
We'll go to Julie, yeah.
So many happy memories, but I suppose I would have to remember that very often in films, it's all shot out of sequence. They tried to do things in sequence as much as they could.
Mm-hmm.
So the first scene that I ever shot was the scene outside the factory gates where we all met as kids for the first time. I remember it was shot in September. It was a beautiful sunny day. And I suddenly thought, wow, I'm on a film set. This is quite amazing. It wasn't quite so glamorous as being outside Wonka's gates because actually it was Munich Gasworks.
Oh, was it? Yeah.
But hey. But there were lots of people there and there was a little German Oompa band. And so there was a lot of razzmatazz about us being as kids going to Wonka's factory, but it was also exciting because I was on a movie set.
Oh, yeah. Was it the first movie for all four of you?
For
it was
me.
The first movie for
not
all four
for
of you.
Denise.
Not for me.
What had you done prior, Denise?
I had done Neon Ceiling and I'd done a lot of soap operas in Broadway.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
But nothing as fantastic.
Nothing that I will ever surpass in anyone's memory.
I lied about my CV to get the part.
Did you? What did you tell them?
I'd been at theatre school for a little while, only for a couple of months. I started in September, and I auditioned for this part in January. And I'd figured already by then that every time I went for a job, they'd say, what have you done before? And I'd say nothing, and then I wouldn't get the part.
You'd be done, right.
Mm. So I lied. So,
there's nothing wrong in show business.
Oh, I made up all sorts of things. I'd done all sorts of movies, and I figured that if Mel Stewart ever decided to check on my CV, at least he'd think I'd had kind of sort of some guts and courage to lie.
Certainly, it was a Veruca.
It was very Veruca.
Very Veruca.
I remember reading about that in your book.
Oh, I think
let's
it is
talk
in my
about
book.
The book.
Yes.
Talk up the book a little bit, because you have a sale from me for sure as soon as we're done.
I have one sale here, don't I? Well, it has a title that it couldn't be called anything else. It's called I Want It Now.
Perfect.
And it's my memoirs of my life on the set, but it was triggered almost by when I decided to do it. I asked my mother, you know, what were her recollections of the time, and she produced all the letters that I'd written home. The movie was shot in Germany. Mm-hmm. I was away from home for 3 months without any of my family, and back in that day, no emails, no texting,
right.
No smartphones, no internet. So I wrote letters home the hard way, and she'd kept them all. So it's got
nice.
my accounts, if you like, of, you know, the first time I met them and seeing the set for the first time and meeting Gene Wilder, and they're all in the book.
And she has exact dates.
Oh, yeah. Smart.
Everything of when we... That's reading the book and I'm like, who remembers this stuff?
Certainly
and
not
she
a young
has
girl.
It all.
Denise, I know that you had a bad experience, you said, with the bleeding scene where they're bleeding the juice out of you. Were all the other memories happy, or did you each have an unhappy memory?
Oh, it was. We had the most fun. We bonded, and it was just like being with brothers and sisters. We just all had a great time.
Some of it for me is sad. I mean, these guys all had members of their family out there, but because I was English, no, and because I had to be on the English school system,
so
I had
the
to
rule
have a tutor.
So the rule in England is no parents allowed.
Well,
a very strict
no
family
parents,
rule,
yeah.
Really.
No, my mum had a job. She had to work, but I had an English tutor, so I had to have a chaperone come
Sue
tutor.
Sue Bream.
But but reading the letters that, you know, that my mum produced, for me, are quite sad. You know, I miss you very much. much, and I'm having a lovely time, but I want to come home.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's a really sad bit, and it said, I've managed to save £8 this week, and I think that'll be enough for you to phone me. And I was sending money home so that my mother could phone me. You know, those days, you had to book an international phone call. And so for me, there were some sad memories.
That is sad. And when you would write, I want to come home, would you write, and I want to come home now, like in a movie? Did you do that?
I want it now.
Well, Julie had her 13th birthday there.
On the set?
Right. And they did that the day that she filmed her song, but her mother came out.
Wait, let's take a break, because I want to hear the story. I'm anxious to hear the story. I have to take a little break. It's Bill Left with you on WGN with four people that I've wanted to meet, and they're even cooler than I dreamed. The cast of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. We'll be right back. All right, it's back to me, Bill Left, on WGN, and four people, like I said, I've wanted to meet forever. Peter Ostrom, who is Charlie Bucket, Julie Cole, who is Veruca Salt, Paris Thiemann, who is Mike TV, and Denise Nickerson, who is Violet Beauregard. I didn't even have to write the last names down. That's in my brain forever.
Got to give you a little correction. It's Thiemann.
Is it Thiemann? I'm sorry, Paris.
It's okay. I don't care.
In the fantasy I've had about this moment, it's always been Thiemann, but I can switch it to Thiemann
easily. Okay,
Here's a weird story I need to tell you. In my wedding vows, I quoted your movie when my wife and I were up and we were getting...
You said, I want it now.
I want it now. I actually said that on the honeymoon, in the wedding ceremony, I said, in my favorite movie, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, at the end, in the elevator, he says, never forget what happened to the boy who got everything he wanted. He lived happily ever after, and that's how you make me feel. And the people who were there watching were divided. Half of them went, oh, from Willy Wonka, and the other half went, what's wrong with him? You don't quote a movie during your vows. You just don't
I got chills when you said it.
Thank you. I think
that is one of the best lines of the story. And you do know the story behind that, right?
I don't know the story. What is it?
There was no closing line from the film, and the writer had gone on sabbatical into
vacation in the woods of Maine
and there was a telephone on a tree and Mel Stewart called and the guy answered the phone and he said, I need a closing line for this film. And he said, well, let me think. And he said, they all lived happily ever after. And that was
Well, it seems like the obvious last line, and yet the way it was pulled off was so magical and so perfect. And I remember seeing it for the first time just going, that's exactly how this movie needs to end.
And that's, you know, that's how it ended.
We were talking a little bit about celebrating birthdays on the set. Two of you did, correct? Your 13th birthday in both cases?
We did. My 13th birthday was spent filming my song, I Want It Now, which was a great way to spend your 13th birthday. I'll never forget it. But prior to that, my mother had managed to struggle out from England via boat and train.
With her £8 a week for that phone call.
She saved it up. You know, we were a bit more Charlie Bucket in my house than Veruca Salt. So she came out and she carried this birthday cake all the way to Germany, which she'd had made in the shape of a book, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Yeah. So she'd carried it all the way from England via Holland and Belgium and I don't know where else she went.
How many hours?
Was it hours and hours?
It was like 72 hours traveling or something to get there. She couldn't be there for my birthday, which I think was a Monday. So she came out for Saturday and then had to go back on the Sunday. I had forgotten, and I remembered all of that, but when we went in 2003, we were taken back by an English television company to do a Where Are They Now after they were famous thing. And we went back to Germany and went and visited the set and went to the same hotel that we stayed in. And they took us to the tram stop. And it makes me cry now, but thinking about it, I burst into tears because I suddenly remembered saying goodbye to my mum as she went back and she wasn't going to be there for my 13th birthday.
So that's the ultimate bittersweet because there were so many happy memories of being back there and shooting, and yet that.
Yeah, but isn't it funny how you forget it? And I didn't even remember that there was a tram station. You know, it had all gone, you know, all over those.
Until you're there. Thank you, Paris. Paris has brought a Kleenex. That's very lovely. I really appreciate it.
What was interesting going back to the film studio where we actually did the film, and this was a famous German movie studio. Mm-hmm. The Great Escape with Steve McQueen was filmed there.
Das Boot.
Cabaret. Cabaret came in off.
Yeah. Cabaret with Joel Grey and Liza Minnelli came in right after us. At any rate, now it's pretty much a television studio.
Yeah.
But they had a museum at the film studio set up when we visited and kind of to recount all the different movies that had been made at the Bavarian Film Studio.
So you're going to do a little movie tour.
Yeah. And Willy Wonka was not listed.
No, not at all.
they didn't have a clue. So when we were back explaining, you know, what we were doing there, they had no idea who we were, what we were. They'd never heard of Willy Wonka.
But again, it's not popular in Germany.
And by the way, I feel like I should say that this is something that's particular to Germany and to some extent France.
Yeah.
Like in, certainly in England, in Ireland, in Australia, in Spain,
yeah.
I know from speaking with people at events, Italy. I've talked to people from the Far East that know what it is, but for some reason it's like a blind spot in the distribution. Germany and
so
France.
So strange.
I don't know why.
Have you seen it dubbed into other languages?
I actually was flipping on the remote control one weekend. I'm sitting on the couch, and I flipped over, and there I am speaking really fluently in Spanish. And I'm like, whoa, watch me go, because I don't know anything but enchilada, taco, burrito.
But the distribution, when the film came out, it was not really we had different openings. The grand opening for me was in Cleveland, Ohio.
Your hometown.
Which is where I lived. And Denise, I believe you were with Gene in New York.
Right.
Yeah.
And
me
but
too.
After
with Rick Dees.
With the radio
Central
legend
Park
Rick Dees, yeah.
At the Met.
I was in London
yeah.
with Princess Margaret. Came
oh,
to
really?
Premiere.
I think you may have won the Celebrity Derby.
Top Trump.
Yeah, that's pretty good. But the opening wasn't a huge thing.
Not at all. No. And after the film came out,
it
kind of went away.
Well,
and really, the marketing, the film was not made for the film's sake. Really, the film was made for Quaker Oats to promote their new line of Willy Wonka candy.
Yeah.
So they were really after marketing chocolate.
Yeah.
And that kind of fell on its face a little bit. And then the film just kind of was pushed aside.
Well, I was going to ask you, because when Roald Dahl wrote it originally, there is a sequel. There's Charlie in the Great Glass Elevator. And I couldn't figure out how a movie this great, because now if a movie does any kind of business like what I thought you guys did, they would absolutely make a sequel. There was never talk
Peter
of a sequel.
Peter refused. He said, I'm only going to do one film, and that is it.
Wow.
You want another Charlie, get somebody else.
I think a great sequel would be what happened to the kids now. Where would they be 40 years later? Because, you see, I think Mike TV, he would be the president of TiVo. I think Violet Beauregard would be on community service scraping gum off the sidewalk. Charlie Bucket, well, you really shouldn't take candy from strange men.
No,
you really
should not.
Shouldn't. And Veruca Salt, I think, would be living in Trump Towers. I think that's.
Or she would be a band that originated in
Chicago.
She might
be a band.
Where were you when you found out there was a band named after your character?
I didn't know about that until about sort of 98 or whatever, you know, when we first got together again for some of these reunions and conventions. And everybody kept saying, what do you think of the band? I think, what band are they talking about? You know, the Beatles again? I don't know. And then a fan kindly brought me the CD. So I hadn't heard of them, but I think they're great.
What a great tribute, though.
Do you know the mean things? They never sent me a CD. They never invited me to a concert. Oh,
they owe their success to you.
They do.
I don't understand.
I'm sure they would if they knew where to find you. And in fact, if anyone out there in Chicago knows,
you can contact our manager.
Well, now, are you all aware of the Smoking Popes? Because the Smoking Popes is an alternative band, and they did a cover version of, now I got to remember the name of the song, There Is No Place I Know, like the World of Pure
Imagination.
Is it called Pure Imagination?
Yeah, Smoking Popes did it? No.
You got to hear their version of it. It's every time people hear it, because I have it on my Walkman, whenever people hear it, they need to know where it is and where they can get it. Their eyes just light up. They
is
love it that much.
Or
so,
like,
this is out to the Smoking Popes.
Yeah.
There are five Wonka children who would like their own copy.
It's really good.
You can send it to either Paris Themen, not
Themen,
or else
Themen.
Bill.
Please send it to me. Were there any on-screen romances between the five of you?
Oh, boy.
Here it comes. You can tell me.
Well, okay. Julie and I were very civilized. You know, mm-hmm. we were 12, 13. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you got a boyfriend one day and one the next. But you don't really do anything but blink and
right.
smile at each other. So Peter was the hot item. And so one day I'd be his girlfriend. Next day Julie would be his girlfriend.
Really?
So the day I had to pick my nose in the Wonkatania and
wasn't
say
her
spitting
day.
Is a
it
dirty
was my
habit.
Day.
That was her day. So I'm picking my nose, and I begged Mel Stewart. I said, can I just turn to the side? He looked me straight in the eye and said, up to the second digit, Denise. And I'm like, you are the nastiest person I've ever met in my life. So the day of the man turning me every 5 minutes is the blueberry turnover.
Yeah.
These two went skipping off to the commissary for lunch, batting eyelashes at each other. And I'm like, I'm hanging here, blue, stuck. This is so wrong. But I did get to go to the Oktoberfest with Peter. I must confess.
That's nice.
He asked Julie first. But remember, we had snail mail for the £8 a week.
See, being a well-brought-up English girl.
So
she
had to write to her mother, and by the time her mother answered, it was too close. So he asked me, I win.
I've always wondered if guys in bars ever used that line. If they ever went up to a girl and go, I've got the golden ticket, and then just winked, if that would ever pay off.
It has been said on a few occasions.
Paris, you do not have children. The other three of you do have children. What is it like watching the movie with your kids?
They can't be bothered to watch it.
You just that right?
Oh, is that on again? Oh,
really?
You're watching yourself again?
Not at all.
Were they at one time? Well,
never.
First time? Never?
It's been, you know, part of our family, my life forever. So it's something that they grew up with. So they're truly not...
Taken for granted.
Impressed. Although 2 weeks ago they had the film enshrined, I guess, at the George Eastman House in Rochester at their theater. And so it's in their archives now. And that's the first time in probably 10 years that I've sat and watched the film in its entirety with my family. And it was a lot of fun.
They're older, too.
They're older. The theater had sold out, and I was worried that nobody would come.
Were you really? Yeah.
And so it was a nice evening. So I think they were proud of their dad.
I think that the older that they get, the more that they appreciate it.
Do you? Yeah.
I downplayed my role as Charlie Bucket for years.
I know.
It really wasn't until I had my own children that I realized that it was kind of special that there's only one Charlie, and I won the golden ticket. I was, you know, we were all, but particularly for me, I think I was in the right place at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
And lightning struck, you know, a little bit for this film, for whatever reason, and it worked. You know, Mel created something. Well, we all created something, you know, that's pretty special. But
and Gene. Please, let's not all forget Gene.
It was a unique experience it's a neat thing to have on your resume.
Sure. When you saw it at the Eastman Theater, you probably couldn't eat and drink like you can at the Hollywood Palms.
Right, that's correct. And I will let me again remind people, well played, Paris, well played. This weekend.
That's why he's the manager.
That's why. That's smart. All right. On Friday at the Hollywood Boulevard Theater, that's in Woodridge. On Saturday at the Hollywood Palm in Naperville. On Sunday at the Hollywood Boulevard again in Woodridge. The best thing to do is go to atriptothemovies.com. More with the stars of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory right after this. All right, Bill Left back with you with four of the kids. I'm still going to refer to you guys as kids. I know you're a little older.
Oldest kids in the business. We love it.
Pete Ostrom, who played Charlie Bucket. Julie Cole, who played Veruca Salt. Paris Themen. A lot of people pronounce your name wrong, Paris, and I get very mad when they do. They say Themen. You should see. I stand up for you every time they do that.
Yes, Mr. Leaf, I understand.
Paris is Mike TV.
Shall we pick him up? Because actually, I'm Julie Dawn Cole.
Oh, yeah, then you definitely, yes. Absolutely, you should. Denise Nickerson, of course, Violet Beauregard. And I know the actor who played your dad just passed away about a couple months ago, a month or
Leonard
so ago.
Leonard Stone. What a delight.
He was a good guy. I saw him in other movies over the time and some TV.
I did an appearance with him about 4 or 5 years ago, and just a really,
guy.
Really terrific man.
Let's talk about Gene Wilder. I've been a huge fan of Gene's, not just from your movie, but, you know, everything he's ever done has just been so good. What was it like to spend some time with Gene Wilder on the set?
He was fantastic and very, patient, I suppose is the one word. You know, imagine you've got five kids clambering all over you and vying for attention all day long.
Paris.
Yeah.
And, but he didn't go and retire to his trailer, and we were never told, you know, go and leave Mr. Wilder alone or what have you. So he would sit around and hang around on set with us and tell us stories and jokes.
Really?
And very, very soft-spoken.
Yeah, very.
Had any of you seen him in other films before you did the movie with him?
I think he'd only done Quacks Your Fortune as a cousin in the Bronx.
Is that all he had done at the time?
Producers.
But oh, right. You know, we were 12, so we wouldn't have seen his work at that right. point.
You weren't big Zero Mostel fans when you were 12 years old?
This is something I don't talk about much, but my best friend, a guy named Richard Zyman, who's a big actor and on stage in Seattle, his godfather was Zero Mostel.
Really?
Yeah, so I met Zero Mostel in those days, probably in, maybe in 69, around the time he was doing Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum.
Wow.
And he was an artist, actually. My buddy Richard has a painting by Z.
Yeah.
They called him Z. And I met Zero Mostel contemporaneous to all of this.
How about that? That's a weird
thing. It's just a weird thing. Yeah, I don't know if I've ever mentioned that in an interview
before. That's amazing.
But it's a
really
weird little sort of thing. Anyway.
Why did you stay away for so long? Everybody else wanted to talk about the movie and kind of relive the magic of the movie. But Pete, you decided early on you didn't really want to do that.
Well, everybody, you think, and I had a wonderful experience on the film, but it was a long process.
Mm-hmm.
I was there 5 months, and the novelty of being in a film wears off very quickly once you actually start making, once you're in production.
Sure.
It's rather tedious work in many ways doing a film. And so... But I look back at the film, and all of us, you know, we were young professionals, but we were expected to work and be professional. And I admire Mel for doing this. He treated us as adults. He didn't treat us as kids.
Mm-hmm.
And we're expected, you know, to work basically as adults. So kind of that work ethic, you know, kind of rubbed off. I think we all had it, but it definitely made an impression on me, you know, making the film. So it's a long process doing the film.
Oh,
but
sure.
But I love theater work. I just found, you know, I had other, you know, doors that opened to
no
me.
No one was trying to convince you to stay in the business at that point to do more movies, no?
No, I had the opportunity, and I guess Julie did too,
yeah.
From Wolper, our producer, to do 3 more films. But at that point, I had no idea what those films would ever be, and I didn't like not knowing, signing on the dotted line to something that I had no control over.
Right.
That made me very uncomfortable.
Have you since found out what those projects would have been?
There were none. I signed, and nothing happened.
Right. Really?
It was a moot point, because David Wolper never did another feature production after that. Then it was television, Roots.
Roots, I was just going to say, yeah.
He did the opening.
You wouldn't have been good in Roots?
I think
you bring 5 kids in the middle of Roots, it makes things a little interesting.
Let's sing a song.
He did the opening for the Olympics in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. but he got out of feature films.
He produced the Academy Awards, too,
yes,
I think.
Yeah. Yes. So whether or not I had signed, it was probably a moot point. But
yeah.
My life went in a different direction.
And the rest of you did pursue show business for a bit. Did you find it to be bittersweet after doing a movie like Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory?
See, here's the thing. Each time you ask a question like that, you're remembering Willy Wonka as a very sort of powerful and memorable thing. But it took 7 years... 10 years, something like that, for it to become popular. So I started when I was 6. I'd been doing it, and you know, Broadway and commercials, things like that, like mm-hmm. Denise. And then I did another Broadway show when I came back, and I did some other commercials and things like that. I stopped when I was about 16. So in those 5 years after Willy Wonka, until I was 16, it came and went. Nobody knew. Nobody cared.
Really?
It was just a job. I went back to England, back to my theatre school, and the next job I did was in a TV series with one of my best friends from school, who's now the producer of Shakespeare in Love.
Oh,
and
nice.
My Week with Marilyn, which has just been released, and all of that. So my great friend. But my career then was very... Nobody ever asked about Willy Wonka.
That's so inconceivable to me. It really is. There's a scene in the movie early on that always got edited out whenever they would show it on television. It has since been restored, but it's the Cheer Up Charlie scene between you, Pete, and your mom, which I always thought really set the pace for what was about to happen. Why would they single that scene out, do you think, and think it's not that important when shown on television?
I didn't even know that they did that.
Yeah,
that's
the first
the
few times they show it
really?
Is, isn't it?
It moves a little slow during that, and so that could possibly be why.
Diana Stoles,
there's a lot of
Mrs. Bucket.
There's a lot of... Charlie's doing a lot of walking and pondering.
Yeah. I think the reason that they did it is because Mike TV's entrance comes right after that, and they didn't want people to sort of become sleepy and go away before my scene.
So. The people who did Wizard of Oz always tell stories about the Munchkins and how nuts the Munchkins were. Were the people who played the Oompa Loompas, were the guys who played the Oompa Loompas on the Up and Up?
They absolute drunks.
Drunks? Drunks? I've never heard this story before.
They were all lovely. They were lovely. But they were in their mid-20s, and they definitely painted the town red every night, but it really didn't make any difference if they showed up at 5 o'clock.
No, that's very true.
I mean, really. How could you tell? But no, wonderful, wonderful people, but definite partiers. You got to remember, it's 1970.
But they're great practical jokes.
What'd they do?
One of the hotels, in those days, you wouldn't do it now, but do you remember the hotel days when you used to leave your shoes outside your room and somebody would come along and clean them?
Yeah.
So all the guests would put their shoes out in, you know, the businessmen with these rather smart lace-up brogues and all that kind of thing. And the Oompa Loompas went and tied them all the shoelaces together and then dumped them all in the lobby.
So. All right. I know it's terrible, but I think that's pretty funny.
It's funny.
I like it.
It's, you know, it's not quite rock and roll throwing TVs out, but throwing shoes in the lobby.
What was your take on Tim Burton's version a couple years ago? It's not really a remake. It's I think they called it a reimagining.
It's a different film.
What did you think of it? Did you all see it, first of all?
We had to.
Yeah, you were forced to.
Well, you wouldn't have let us live unless you asked us
that
question.
No, that's true.
I went to see it with my son. I'm happy to say I didn't buy a ticket. I think I was asked to go and review it for one of our British newspapers. And I took my son, who must have been about 12 at the time. I said, "Oh, what did you think of it?" He came out and he said, "Ah, it's much better than yours."
What?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
But you know what kids are.
You have to get rid of a kid like that.
He's
that's
still
nothing
locked
but
up.
Trouble.
He's still
good.
Locked up.
You're
it's
doing
okay.
the right thing. What do you guys think?
Different take, different, you know, it's a completely different film. You know, there were some parts that I thoroughly enjoyed, but it's almost unfair to compare the two.
Right.
If anything, it kind of brought, it made our film a little bit more popular because kind of the older generation, of which many people have refused to see the new, the Johnny Depp version.
That's true.
They don't want to be contaminated, I guess.
That's
But a lot of young people, kids, really liked it.
No,
but it brought the discussion back to us because older people would say, okay, you saw Johnny Depp, but have you seen the original?
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, the discussion was on...
Resurgence.
Right. Right. On our film. So
Paris, what was your take on it? Did you get to see it?
Just when I thought we were going to run out of time, before I had to say what I really think, because
like
I will.
It. You don't like it?
I thought that I saw it once in the theater, and I haven't seen it since.
Mm-hmm.
There were about two things that I liked better about that one than ours.
What'd you like better?
I liked the squirrels. I really appreciate the fact that Tim Burton trained some squirrels so they could do Veruca's demise by squirrel rather than by goose. And then the other thing I happened to like was the boat. They had a beautiful boat. And some of the design elements were kind of nice, but I thought that they made big mistakes with Loompa Land and the big mosquito that was chasing the thing.
Yeah.
I didn't like the concept or the execution of the one Oompa Loompa repeated.
Playing all of the Oompa Loompas.
I didn't like the backstory with the father as dentist.
Oh, no, I did like that. No, because you know what it did for me? It was like a companion piece to your movie, because I always attribute it to, now I know a little more about the Gene Wilder version of Willy Wonka, because I know about his dad. So in my brain, I used that for your movie.
Is his dad a dentist in the book?
I don't know.
Anybody?
Is he? I don't know.
See, so that to me is a thing where like they were trying to make
Charlie.
No, in the book, Charlie's father screws on space caps.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, but Mr. Wonka,
there's no mention of his father.
Right, no.
So here they said, look, we're going to make something that's closer to the book.
Yeah.
And they didn't. So anyway, I'll tell you other things about how they screwed up the relationship between Charlie and Wonka and on and on and
there's
on.
There's a lot of people who feel that same way. I don't want to get you started.
Yeah.
The scene that everybody says
I don't want to.
The scene that everybody always points at as the scariest moment in the movie is the boat scene, where there's real quick flashes of just various things, including Slugworth popping up and scaring you. Was that by design? Was that kind of a way of saying, I know this is mostly a happy movie, but look out, there's rough waters ahead?
That's Roald Dahl's macabre hand surfacing, I think.
Yeah.
I thought it was terrifying.
It was terrifying.
Gene broke out into song, and my mouth dropped, and I said, no one is ever going to see this movie. This man is a raving lunatic.
And that was another surprise, actually. They didn't. I think they might have said something like, you know, hold on to your hats. It's going to get a little bumpy here or something, just to sort of give us a little bit of an indication. But they didn't say, and now Gene is going to do something that's really going to
go off.
You know,
we had no idea.
See, that's so much more effective, I think, because then you get natural reaction from all of you.
He was brilliant. But at the time, 13 years old, I thought, you're a lunatic.
Yeah.
Which, of course, was perfectly in character.
We mentioned earlier there was a little sequence at the beginning that was taken out, you know, when they're showing all the little montage sequences. Did you guys shoot other stuff that did not make the final cut of the movie?
I think everything was in it.
Really?
Everything was in it.
That's so unusual. Usually there's extra scenes that they, for one reason or another, just don't add.
Well, they cut out my song.
They cut it out. They cut it out.
They were on a
maybe you'll sing it for us now.
They were on a tight budget, so
I'm a blueberry turnover.
And that's one of the reasons, actually, why they made the film in Germany, because it was going to be a little cheaper than filming in California.
But it ended up working out.
It did.
It really did. Well, guys, I said this at the beginning, and I so mean it. It's been a magical film since you first made it. It'll live on for generations and generations, and I know that at the time you didn't realize it, but you obviously do realize it now. This is one of those movies that just really changes people's lives.
We are blessed.
It's Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. You can meet the stars of Willy Wonka in the Chocolate Factory by going to atriptothemovies.com. They will be in all this weekend, and meeting fans, and hopefully they will tell you stories like mine of how great it is. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate y'all being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.